You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Emily Zimmerman. She's talking to me from Seattle, Washington. Emily, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Emily, you've done so much different work over the years as a curator and writer, from the Experimental Medium Performance Center, MPAC, and so many more things. Are you the director of the Jacob Lawrence Gallery at the University of Washington School of Art at the moment?
I am. I've been in that role for about 2 years now.
So tell me, what are you working on at the moment? It could be in that role. I don't know if you're doing other things outside of that role, but what is it that you're working on at the moment?
You know, as director of the gallery, this is a moment where I've taken a little step away from curating, and I'm thinking about how to support creating a curatorial program in Seattle. So I teach a class in curating that is open to all of the students of the University of Washington, but also primarily students of the School of Art and the Art History Program. So our next exhibition coming up is curated by Juan Franco, who is the assistant curator at the gallery. In the gallery's program, I'm thinking about, you know, how to create those opportunities for students to have really substantial engagement and budget to be able to work with artists that can then help platform their work and support them going out into the world and getting jobs. It's a really exciting thing to be working on for me. I had no idea how much I would love teaching when I got into this context, and it's where I put a lot of my energy right now. After that, we're doing an exhibition with a DX Arts faculty member. DX Arts is a program at the University of Washington that is similar to the Experimental Media Performing Arts Center in its engagement with digital tools, emerging technologies, asking questions about our relationship with technology and society. And James Koop, his show is called Lessons in Passivity, and it's looking at digital labor, the phenomenon of Turk workers, things like that. And then I'm working on next year's season, so really getting ready to do some exciting exhibitions around the gallery's mission to bring together experimentation, social justice, and education, honoring the legacy of Jacob Lawrence. I'm also writing for BOM, again, doing interviews with artists. And I think that's it. Those are the main things right now.
Okay, so let's talk about some of those. In terms of the next season, and the mission of the space, what is it in terms of materials? And maybe we could look at this through the lens of the past show, but you mentioned it was almost like MPACT with a focus on technology and digital media. The current show or the show that you were discussing, Lessons in Passivity, sounds like there's a social justice element there and education.
Mm-hmm.
And the digital media, of course, is how things are being aggregated, as I understand from what you're saying. But is there also a mission or shows that you've done that are kind of marrying technology with artists' visions or work?
We did an exhibition last year with Carrie Tribe that was a presentation of her commission for SF MoMA, Standardized Patient. And that was important in the context of the University of Washington, which is a Tier 1 research university to create dialogue between the School of Art and the medical school. Standardized patients are actors that are brought in to test doctors that are in training about their knowledge and bedside manner. And so there's a really interesting reversal of the roles, the typical power dynamic between a patient and a doctor. So that, you know, I would say we find a moment in every season to deal with questions of technology and social justice. It's not the primary focus of our work, but it's an important aspect to the overall picture. Whereas at MPAC, that was the primary focus of the work. That was, you know, to ask questions about interrogating the role that technology was playing in society and the possibility of tools.
And since it is the Jacob Lawrence Gallery, as it's called, and you said it was also honoring his legacy, to talk a little bit about him, how does it honor his legacy, or how does that fit into the curatorial vision or process?
Yeah. So, you know, Jacob Lawrence was one of the greatest painters to emerge out of the United States in the 1940s. He's extremely lauded, extremely talented, also extremely humble. And he taught at the University of Washington from 1970, and then he was professor emeritus until shortly before his death in 2000. And the gallery was dedicated to him in 1994. And at that time, it created this, a mission was created for, they called it civil rights at the time, education and experimentation, because Jacob Lawrence was certainly always trying out and experimenting with new tools. There's a really beautiful focus on tools in his work and ways of working with the vibrancy and transparency of paint and printmaking. The way that we primarily honor Jacob Lawrence is through a residency and commissioning process called the Jacob Lawrence Legacy Residency. It's an award given every year to a Black artist who is commissioned to create new work around, you know, themes of Africa diaspora, but they're certainly not limited to that. And we just received an NEA grant in support of the program this coming year. And it's the cornerstone of the gallery's exhibition program. Last year we had Danny Giles in residence during the month of January. And then we had simultaneous exhibitions at the Jacob Lawrence Gallery and a space called Soil, an artist nonprofit that's one of the oldest artist nonprofits, I think in the context of the United States. Certainly within the context of Seattle. So we're just beginning that process now. We have nominators that put forward two names of artists each, and then the committee for the Jacob Lawrence Gallery votes and decides who the next resident will be. It's really incredibly exciting to see new work by Black artists put into the landscape. There is just an article about Stephanie Jennison's work that was produced during the Gigaborne's legacy residency in 2016. But Cedric Falk wrote an article using that work as an example. And it's it has an important impact on the landscape.
That's fantastic. It sounds like such a great program there, and a great place to be working. How do you like I want to talk about BOM a little bit, but just in terms of Seattle, you've been on the East Coast, they are on the West Coast. How do you like the West Coast for?
It's great.
Yeah.
I love the East Coast. I often feel like a Philadelphian in Seattle, because Philadelphia cherishes its history so much, and Seattle is a very innovation-centered city where the past is not claimed in the same way as it is on the East Coast. So I find myself often getting really curious about the histories that are not upheld in the same way as they would be in a context, you know, like Yale or Penn or other East Coast schools. Because UW, the first drawing class was in 1890, and it's possible, we're still trying to confirm this, but it's possible that the University of Washington granted the first MFA in the country, and yet no one talks about it. So I find it really, really fascinating in that regard. But Seattle is, it's exquisitely beautiful. There's a lot of freedom to really kind of invent, invest, dream up things that, you know, kind of just infuses the spirit of the place. Of course, in terms of social justice, it sets a lot of precedents within the context of the United States. So it's an exciting place to be at this moment.
And BOM Magazine, so you're writing for them, and of course the interviews are a favorite subject of mine. What are you doing with BOM, and who are you interviewing? How does that process work?
Like many cities across the United States, Seattle's art journalism is rapidly dwindling, the support for it, it's a really essential part of an arts ecosystem. So when I got to the Jacob Lawrence Gallery, we started a journal called Monday that brings together scholars working internationally, and then, you know, scholars at the University of Washington alongside students that want to try their hand at it. And I started doing interviews for Monday just to kind of take on a little bit of the work and kind of lead by example. And then I realized that if I was really committed to arts journalism, I would actually work to make visible some of the exhibitions that are happening within the context of Seattle to a national audience. So just a few months ago, I did an interview with Jeffrey Gibson, who had an exhibition at the Seattle Art Museum. And it was such a moving, important exhibition that dealt with really important histories and really interrogated the role of museums and their collections in perpetuating incorrect histories about First Nations people. It was a really important interview for me in thinking about what the possibilities and pitfalls are of working within the art world. And the hope is to, you know, keep doing that with work that's happening around Seattle.
And so when you're approaching these interviews, to talk about your process a little bit, I talk to people about what they're working on now and exploring it. Maybe you can talk about a recent interview with BOM, or not necessarily with the other publication. How do you approach an interview?
You know, it's a very fine balance between preparation and openness, I think. I try to make sure that I do my homework. I read all of the prior interviews with that artist, or if there aren't previous interviews, any material I can get my hands on. And, you know, I talk to them in person before the interview, too, to get a sense of some likely routes we might go down. And but then when it comes time for the interview, I don't script it. I have a set of questions, and I then try within the flow of the interview to just raise those topics that may be suggested by a particular answer. It's a really fascinating performative space.
It sure is.
Yeah.
So do you have a favorite interview that comes to mind?
You know, a few years ago, while I was still at MPAC, I did an interview with Gordon Hall, where Gordon's preferred method is to sit in a room together at a Google Doc and to type the interview. And I loved that. Definitely put me on my toes, and it was really fun to see the conversation unfold in that way. But the rules were similar to a spoken interview in that you couldn't just erase something or take something back. You had to kind of keep going.
I like that. Yeah, that is an interesting set of rules. I mean, that's the wonderful thing about interviewing. I find artists, curators, other people, sometimes people come to it with their own set of rules, which is exciting and challenging.
Yeah.
For sure. So before I ask you the last question, is there anything else? There'll of course be links to the gallery and a number of other things here. Is there anything else you want to plug before I move on about an upcoming show or anything like that for people who may be in Seattle or traveling there soon?
Oh, that's a good question. I did not prepare for that. Well, let's see. Sorry.
I can edit this out. That's fine. If you want to look it up, or I can ask you a different question.
I think the two upcoming shows made it in, so it's, you know, really in terms of the Jacob Lawrence Gallery, we're covered. I think everything made its way in there, the exhibitions and Monday. I guess the one thing I'll say is that I'm really excited about Monday as an emerging critical arts writing platform. We're just in the process of revising it and soliciting community feedback about what its next iteration will be. And it's looking like going digital will be part of that new plan that hopefully we're able to launch this fall. Coming fall, there'll be a greater opportunity to give exposure to arts writers that are working in the context of the Pacific Northwest.
Excellent. And for people, I guess we'll put a link in here. Is there a link so they can find out more about Monday so far or subscribe? How can listeners get more information about Monday?
There's a page on our website right now, and we'll be linking to the new URL for the new online platform for Monday.
Okay. Very exciting. So I'll put a link in the interview for that so people can find that. Emily, let me ask you the last question. What is it that you're reading at the moment?
Just last month, I was at Common Field in Philadelphia, and they distributed this incredible publication by Carolyn Lazar called Accessibility in the Arts, A Promise and a Practice, edited by Kemi Adeyemi, who is at the University of Washington Gender, Women, and Sexuality Studies Department. And Kemi runs this extraordinary program at the Jacob Lawrence Gallery called Black Embodiment Studio, which is a graduate incubator for writing about Black art and performance. So I highly recommend that publication. And then the other thing I'm reading right now is a series of interviews with art critics called What It Means to Write About Art, Interviews with Art Critics. And it has really extraordinary writers inside of it, including Fred Moten and Douglas Crimp and Huey Copeland. So that would be another one I'd recommend.
Thanks. I'm so glad you mentioned it. That's written by Jared Ernest as well, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, because I interviewed him not long ago. Thank you so much, Emily, for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.